Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? I haven't said this for a while. It's podcast time, the podcast that tries to make economics a little bit more comprehensible, a little bit more germane to all of our lives. So I was just saying, off air, that John is perplexed. He just says, I'm always perplexed. I hope
it's
all
the beauty of the world,
it's
Mac.
The beauty of the world.
Trying to navigate my way through the world. It's very tricky, Mac.
I know.
Very, very tricky.
I know. John is on the equivalent of an intellectual Zimmer frame.
Steady on. Steady on. You are the Zimmer frame.
I am your crutch. Anyway, hope all is well in your life and the world is going reasonably well as we enter February of 2023. 12-month anniversary of the war in Ukraine is coming up.
Yeah.
Has been a bizarre, bizarre yes. year. This time, 12 months ago, John. It's interesting you think blue skies, finance companies doing extremely well, tech companies doing extremely well, no war, inflation low.
Unicorns trotting around the place.
Unicorns, yeah, you go, or whatever unicorns do. Do you think the unicorns give horse noises or deer noises?
I don't know. I'd say they sing beautiful songs. That's
well,
what
I'd actually, say. You know, look at you did there. Look at that segue. We're going to talk about how unicorns turn into zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because you said to me this morning you were interested in what you saw in the papers over the last couple of weeks, particularly the last couple of days, about jobs being axed in high tech.
Exactly. And just reading about this, because going back a few months, there were the big layoffs in the tech world and the big tech yeah. shock and jobs being lost and all the, you know, the Googles and the Facebooks and the blah, 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 blah. And they're all gone. And that was horrible, especially coming up to Christmas. But of course, we all thought that was the end of it. But no.
Yeah.
Google just announced there last week another big swathe of jobs. Intel is another whatever. I don't know. The job numbers in the thousands. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's a very interesting thing. So today's podcast is going to be about the plight of 30-somethings.
Mm.
That
yeah.
what tends to happen, and people rarely appreciate this, is the year you were born has profound implications for the way in which your life materializes, simply because the economy moves in these big, big shifts. And if you're born at a certain time when the economy is shifting, some things go well for you, but other things don't. And those that don't manifest themselves in later years. So it's not your childhood or your teenage years, it could be into your 30s when things are not going well. So we're going to look at the tech crunch, as they call it, in the context of being 30-something. And the reason is that the vast majority of workers in those places are in their 30s.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and
true, yeah.
what we're having is, as I've said before, it's never been more expensive to be 30. And we're going to look at that.
Yeah.
But come back to the tech crunch. We're also going to look at the fact that the tech crunch is a function of interest rates. It's not a function of a change in the ability of the technology to deliver something in the future, right? So basically what we have, and this is how unicorns become zombies, right?
Right.
So there is a notion which is called a zombie company. And those zombie companies were typically companies that were kept breathing and kept alive by soft state subsidies. This is the idea that what you find is many, many free marketeers would accuse companies of being zombies. So, for example, the banks in Ireland were kept open after the crash.
Right. Okay, yeah, yeah.
By the state bailing them out.
Yeah.
So they became zombie banks. And the reason they became zombie banks, they were just banks in all but name,
yeah,
in the sense that what they were actually was a safe deposit box, but they weren't doing the job of banking.
Yeah.
They weren't lending out, etc., because the people were traumatized, the balance sheet was broken, so they've just been kept alive.
Yeah.
So there's a sort of a shorthand in economics about zombie banks. Typically, what it is used is to accuse companies that are actually old-fashioned and still clinging on to relevance.
Mm.
And those companies, because usually they employ a lot of people, are kept going by state subsidies. That's the shorthand.
Yeah. But those banks aren't zombies anymore.
No, but they were zombies for a while,
yeah,
right?
And they've, especially when they've just lifted the cap on those bonuses.
Yeah.
But anyway, we won't go there.
It's a personal gripe of mine. It is a personal gripe. But you know, for example, many, many companies, for example, in old energy sectors like coal, places like Borden and Mona, all big Irish state or worldwide state companies, which weren't making profits, but were kept going because they had a social value, right? They were part of the public sector, et cetera. And then this quasi-public sector, and you see that all over the world, right? Mm. The Canadians in Quebec have a huge problem with these type of companies, the Americans as well. So the idea was that the tech guys, the people who said, you know, the tech bros,
yeah,
you know, move fast and break things. They'd always point their finger at these old zombie companies and say, break them up, deregulate them, and sell them off because they're only being kept alive by cheap loans from the state.
Yeah.
Ironically now, all those tech bros didn't understand that their unicorns, or many of their unicorns, were sustained by cheap loans from the state as well in the guise of zero interest rates.
Right. Right? Yes.
So
okay,
what you
gotcha.
Had was the zombies of this decade will not be the old state transport company or the old state energy company, or what have you.
Mm.
It's all these shitty companies in Silicon Valley that were termed unicorns because interest rates were zero. But when interest rates change and move up 3, 4, 5%, those unicorns are exposed as zombies because they've no business model. Now,
yeah,
what happens is this is all to do with economists. There's an awful word in economics called malinvestment,
ooh,
right?
Yes.
Okay. Mal is not Malcolm, but as bad, right? So I come back to our friend Schumpeter.
Oh, yes.
Back to Schumpeter. So Schumpeter, as we said many years ago in the podcast, Joseph Schumpeter's economics probably sums up most accurately the way the world actually works,
mm,
as opposed to the way we'd like it to work. And how the world actually works is that innovation drives companies, innovation sorts out the good from the bad, creative destruction is about companies going bad, they're just simply not good enough, people tinker around, they come up with better designs, and away we go. Right?
Mm.
So the best design wins all the time, right? And that's the Schumpeterian idea. And of course, then, the free marketeers...
That's survival of the fittest as well.
The survival of the fittest. I always say it's not the fittest, it's the most adaptive.
Adaptive,
right?
Yeah.
Because what you find in evolution is the fittest, you know, sometimes doesn't survive.
Mm.
It's actually the most tricky little thing, you know, survives. Like, why did the worm survive? The worm is millions and millions of years old.
Yeah.
It's clearly not the fittest, but it's the fittest at what it does.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's a little niche. So the economy is quite similar. So if we come back, the idea that the tech bros used to talk about was that the Schumpeterian day of reckoning is always going to be for these old companies. What you actually find now is the Schumpeterian day of reckoning is for the tech companies. So why is this? It's because the rate of interest is a very fascinating, I know you find it, you're glazing over already,
no,
but it's
I'm
a
not,
fascinating
not,
idea, right?
Not,
it's maybe the most important price in the economy.
But this is what I've come to realize and come to learn over the last while, is how crucial the interest rate is and the power that central banks actually wield.
Yes, and if they really...
With this single tool
with this
that
this single tool, exactly, the single tool. By the way, if you're into reading this week, a book on the rate of interest is a book by Edward Chancellor. Great book called The Price of Time, History of the Rate of Interest. I know it doesn't sound fascinating, but believe me, it will be worth
it. It's a page turner.
It's a page turner, exactly. Exactly. Who done it, right? Okay. It's a great book. Anyway, so, but one of these particular issues is the following. The rate of interest sorts out the men from the boys, right? Because the rate of interest puts a price on investment. And once you put a price on investment, you can calculate what's called the net present value of any investment, which means
right.
how much money you're actually making for your investment. If the rate of interest is zero, it means that lots and lots of stupid things are financed, right?
Yeah.
And Schumpeter would say, if you bring the rate of interest to zero, you destroy what would they call the signal mechanism in interest rates, the interest rate telling you what's good and what's bad.
Okay.
If you bring it to zero, there's no way of calculating the company's good or bad. So what happens then?
The money's cheap and money's free cheap. And they throw it at
everything. So basically the companies are growing, not because of market share, but they're growing simply because they have no budget constraint, right? So they just keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing, or issuing stock, or persuading. What the tech companies tend to do the following. If they're not listed, what they will do is they will have IPOs, not even IPOs, but they'll have rights issues. So they'll go to their original investor and say, we need to raise more money.
Yeah.
And typically what happens is, we need to raise more money, but the price per share rises. So the value of these companies goes through the roof. A good one would be Stripe, was valued at 90 billion at a certain stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it could be 20 billion. Who knows, right? Who knows, right? But to come back to your point.
Those figures are just on paper. There's nothing really behind it.
Well, this is the fascinating thing about wealth, John. Wealth is on paper. You see, I'm always intrigued at why money disappears. I'm fascinated by this, right? That
where's Elon's money?
Yeah, exactly. So you think about Elon Musk. So somebody said to me the other day that Elon Musk lost $500 billion. Half trillion, right? That's like twice our GDP almost, okay? In a year.
That's not funny.
But it is kind of funny because where does the money go? It was never there in the first place. It was just notional wealth on paper, a function of the share price of Tesla at a certain point in time, of which he owned 5% or 10% of the whole company.
Yeah.
But to come back to the tech idea. So the tech companies now are shedding jobs because as interest rates go positive, something happens to people's time horizons. This is important. When interest rates are zero, your time horizon in terms of your return on investment is infinite.
Mm.
And the reason it's infinite is it's not costing you any money to actually invest.
Sure, yeah.
As interest rates rise, what tends typical to happen is people say, okay, you told me that the company was going to deliver profits in 10 years' time. And I was grand with that last week when interest rates were zero. But now interest rates are 5%. Are you going to make profit next year? Because I quite like my money back.
Yeah.
Because it's now costing me, right? The opportunity cost of money has gone up through the roof. And then what happens is it causes all these tech companies to reassess their rather Pandlossian worldview of what the world's going to be like in 15 years' time.
Yeah.
So people say, look, I know you're going to change the world, but I wouldn't mind a return on my investment. In fact, first of all, I wouldn't mind a return of my investment first. Can I have my money back?
Yeah.
And if I can't have my money back, can I have a piece of it back, right? So the term return of on investment. So they say, okay. And suddenly then those companies have to generate profits today. And what typically happens when the rate of interest is zero is your cost structure gets out of control. So they buy new offices. They expand their workforces.
Yeah.
You know, they give them more muesli every morning or whatever the fuck they give them in those places, right? Don't they? They give them massages, hand job and muesli in the morning, right? Or whatever you get in those places. Anyway, I come back, John. So what happens is when interest rates go up, there's a new sheriff in town. That sheriff needs to cut costs. Is to see where the return on investment is.
Yeah.
Okay. And if it's not there, what they do is they cut costs. Now, what typically happens then, their share prices begin to fall and fall. And as the share price falls, they use share prices as currency. So the share prices is their wealth, right? As that falls, the cuts get deeper. And that's exactly what we're seeing. But to come back to our point, is those people who are losing their jobs tend to be in their 30s. At a time just when their career should be taking off. And this is the story we'd like to tell this week, which is save a prayer for the millennials, because their world is trickier than we think.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So, Mac, we're talking about millennials and the plight of the millennials at the moment. So
yeah.
if you just look back, so
the actual millennial tang is people who came of age at the millennium. So people who were 18 in 2000. So people born in 1982.
Yeah.
What we're going to look at is later millennials, late stage millennials, okay? Right. Which are people who were born around 1990. Right?
Right.
Which I would describe as the Italia 90 generation, right?
Right.
Because as I've said to you before, my world operates in football cycles.
Yes.
It's really particularly sad. It's kind of pathetic.
But
I remember like the whole world through World Cups and European Championships great goals and great games.
We could look at it through the lens of music as well. So okay, for instance,
so 1988, who put the ball in the English net? Houghton, right?
Okay, we can sing that song. Talking about chance either.
So the great chant is, who put the ball in the English net? Either Kevin Sheedy or Ray Houghton. Let's take Ray Houghton.
Yeah.
Neckar Stadium, Stuttgart, June 1998. We are there. That's where we are.
He still has that poster on his wall.
Oh, do you know what my kids got me for Christmas?
What?
You will love this. A replica vintage Republic of Ireland shirt.
Oh, nice. With the opal.
With the opal.
Yeah.
It's nice. Pure opal. And Shan just says you look like a statesman.
With the big belly.
I was actually going to go to our Christmas dinner up north with it on. My Republic of Ireland jersey sitting at the top of the table.
That would have gone down
the tree. With all the unionists. But I didn't. I wore me Harrington. Okay, talk to me.
Okay, well, say if you're in around 88. So 88 was actually a bad year for music, I have to say. You know, you were dealing with people like Bross and Yaz, The Only Way Is Up.
The Only Way Is Up. But 88, actually, now that I think, Stone Roses, Happy Mondays, 88.
They're coming a little bit later.
Are they coming a bit later? Yeah, are they
coming a bit later. And then you move into, you know, when you're talking about USA 94, that was kind of grunge.
Yeah, it was Seattle stuff and all that carry on. Right.
And Green Day and all that
stuff. So let's take that period, right? Yeah.
Also, 1988 was the year, that's when I moved to London, looking for fame and fortune.
Yeah, no.
Never quite happened.
No, I moved away. Wherever you went, I went the opposite way. I didn't go to London until 94.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course, 94. You were running the central bank.
I was running the country at the time. Exactly. Small job. But let's come back to the idea, right? And it is the fact that the years you were born have a profound effect on your life because the society moves in cycles. So we started with 1988 and we ended 1994. So if you take those 5 years, we're talking about Ireland, but this goes for all of the Western world.
Yeah, absolutely.
The kids born in that, there was 371,000 Irish babies born in that period. And those children are now in their early 30s.
Mm.
Now, what happened to them was they were born in you can actually see that period, almost like a bridge period in Ireland, from the darkness of the 80s to the reasonably enlightenment of the 90s. So the 80s was all bad.
Yeah.
The 90s is in Ireland, the Good Friday Agreement, the economy starts to take off, you have peace in the country for the first time. So it's a good period, right?
Yeah.
So it's a bridge period. So it's the babies who are born just at that, on that, what you would call bridge half decade between the darkness into the light, okay? This is the Renaissance
light. Very spiritualist.
Light. Exactly, very spiritual. But they then left school during 2008, 2009, the big crisis, right?
Yeah.
So they get, they're born into a society that's going well, okay? And the same with the UK, you have the sort of the Britpop years, the Blair years, all that sort of stuff that Britain is actually changing itself.
Yeah.
Same in the United States, these are kids born in the early Clinton years. And they're living through the Clinton, they're born, the kids in the Clinton
so
years.
So they're quite privileged.
They're quite privileged. The society's
spoiled,
going well,
maybe,
et cetera. But they come of age just when the economy collapses, right? So number one, they leave school and they're going into a jobs market, which is very, very tricky.
Yeah.
Or they go to college, right? And they leave college just as austerity bites. So the period 2008, 2012, the world is thinking, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? How are we going to figure this out? It's all hands in the pump. There's no real policy. Then 2012 to 2016 is austerity all over the world, right? So those kids, they might even get into college, but they leave college during austerity, right? So they're spending their 20s trying to launch, which is extremely difficult because of a combination of austerity and the hangover from the financial crisis, right? So their parents are getting rich at this stage because their parents are sitting on houses. Right, and house prices continue to rise as interest rates fall. Remember, we were going back to the zero interest rates. Asset prices rise. Then those kids who are now in their late 20s, just when their career should be going, they get hit by the pandemic. So just think about what they've had to deal with.
Another.
Yeah, and so the pandemic knocks them back another 2 years, right? And 2 years at our age is nothing, but 2 years when you're young is a big deal, right? And then they come out after the pandemic and they're locked out of the housing market.
Yeah.
And they have jobs in things like the tech companies, which seem to be going well, but are much more fragile. So if you look at their lives, very interesting data in the United States. The Americans do a thing called longitudinal studies. So they take data for maybe 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
What they found, or maybe longer than that, is that your wages and your opportunities in your 20s are absolutely consequential to the rest of your lives. So if you fall behind in your 20s, your wages are permanently lower. They never recover.
Why is that?
It's because your expectations of who you are have changed, right? So for example, if you go into, it's a lot to do with expectations, of your own expectations.
Mm.
If you get a good job in your 20s, which is well paid, you begin to benchmark yourself at that salary. Right?
Right.
And other people benchmark you at that salary too.
Yeah. So in the words of Yaz, the only way is up.
The only way is up. Yeah. And you stop there. Whereas if you start benchmarking yourself on the minimum wage, right, or something just above it, your sense of yourself completely changes and you figure out, I am that type of person.
Yeah.
So both from the push and pull factor, the push being the push that you have yourself, but the pull factor is what people expect you to take, changes completely.
Yeah.
So what the Americans show is that if you fall behind in your 20s, it's unbelievably consequential for the rest of your life. Now, which is really unpleasant news, right? What we're finding is the generation, the millennial, we call them millennials, I call them the Italian 90s, right?
Right.
The Italian 90s, they have had a very tricky time, right? And at every time they're knocked down, when they get up off the canvas, wages are a little bit lower relative to our generation. Houses are a little bit more expensive relative to our generation. So what you find, and the data is really interesting here.
Can I just say, before you get into that, is that, and I'm not being smart here when I say this, but no wonder there's a mental health crisis amongst that age group.
That's exactly the case, right? So for example, I've heard, you know, lots of people I know, a bit older than us, who have kids, you know, at that late 20s, early 30s. So you know, you'd go to the pub and they'd say, oh, you know, they're kind of flakes and they're snowflakes and they're this. And part of me thinks, hold on a second, they have a reason to be anxious.
Mm.
And that reason is the following, that all societies have this embedded promise or deal between the society and the people, which is that you will be richer than your mom and dad, right? That there will be a sense of progress and a sense of momentum on the upside, right? That's the social contract. So everybody gets on the conveyor belt and says, well, you know, if I get a good job or I go to college or I do the right thing, the conveyor belt will go along and I will gradually be wealthier than my parents, which is the objective, and they're wealthier than their parents. Now, if you think about Ireland, if you think about our grandparents, okay, and our great-grandparents, they were like, we're talking, you know, four generations ago, five generations, there was a famine here. So you can't be any poorer than starving to death as a general rule, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So just think about how we've propelled forward. Every generation has got richer in Ireland, okay? Except for these guys. Now it's stopped. And this generation is going backward. And they're also the most educated generation, which is unfair. If you look at Canada, if you look at America, if you look at Britain, if you look at Australia, all the English-speaking liberal democracies are suffering from exactly the same thing, which is the conveyor belt has stopped for the generation born, let's say to be broader, in the 80s and 90s. And they are now, in Ireland, there's nearly 400,000 of them, but we're talking tens of millions of people around the world. And tens of millions.
And the tech industry was the kind of ticket out of this. Was to keep the momentum going.
It was the accelerator.
Yeah.
It was like, if you got a job in tech, you were suddenly propelled forward.
Yeah.
So you had that moment. That has now stopped.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on. And if you look at, there's a very interesting piece. This data is from Ireland, but if you're listening in the UK, you'll have probably exactly the same thing, which is that people who were born in the 1980s, by the time they were 22, their average wage was the same as people who were born in the 1960s at 22.
Wow.
That should not be the case.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
So their wages are stagnating. And then you stop that and you look at two biggest indicators now for this Italian 90 generation, housing and childcare. These are the two biggest costs. If you look at what has happened to this generation, as they have struggled in the job market, in the income market, something else has been happening in the asset market, the wealth market, which is house prices have continued to rise and rise and rise.
Mm.
So as they're struggling, their parents, by just doing nothing, by sitting and watching the telly, in effect, are getting richer.
Yeah.
Because the asset upon which they are sitting is getting richer. So what happens is the younger kids, the millennial kids who are locked out of the labor market, are living in the box room of their parents' house. Some of them, not all of them, but some of them. This is the extreme, right? At a time when their parents have never been richer. And they're looking and they're saying to themselves, how the fuck am I going to get on this ladder? Where's my life going?
Yeah.
How am I going to get there? That mom and dad are on, they didn't seem to work particularly hard. They just had normal jobs. And now they're sitting looking at a retirement, which is very, very well paid, right? Very, very well paid, particularly in Ireland because we've 5 workers to every 1 dependent now. So pensions are much greater than anything else and the house prices are much richer. Which is this idea is, if you go on Ryanair websites, apparently the vast majority of people on Ryanair websites have got grey hair. They're going on weekend aways.
It's true.
No, really, yeah. And if you go on a cheap flight out of Dublin now, vast majority of people, not the vast majority, a significant majority and a much greater proportion than they are in the society, because they're a minority in the society, are going away on their holliers.
Can I just on that old age thing, because this is something that I'm now experiencing, not my own old age.
John's old age. Did I tell you about his knee? John is...
Leave the knee out of it.
We have this extraordinary... I know that John is in the house... When I hear his knee, not his voice, his knee, as he goes up the stairs.
It's a little bit like that, all right.
It is.
Actually, I'm going back next week for another injection. But anyway, enough about the knee. But my mum, for instance, you know Carmel.
Yeah.
She's 90 and, you know, and she's getting old. She's getting frail and all the rest. So not only, just taking the millennials into account here, not only were the millennials locked out of the market and all the rest, there is this old age thing and looking after your elderly parents coming down the track. And that's another big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
And, you know, I'm kind of in the middle of now and we're kind of looking at nursing homes and all that kind of stuff. But looking at the cost of childcare.
Yeah, which we're going to come on to in a second. Yeah,
and not only that, because that's significant, but also the cost of elderly care is equally exorbitant.
Yeah.
I was looking at price of nursing homes, and they're anything in the region of €1,500 per week plus.
Per week?
Per week. So you're looking at, what's that, 70 to 80 grand a year?
More. Yeah, 70, 80 grand plus all the other costs.
Plus all the other costs.
Well, you see,
but here's the thing as well. I know there's the kind of Fair Deal scheme that the government, but as you were saying there, this older generation are the ones who got wealthy.
Yeah.
So they don't meet the threshold to, or a lot of them don't meet the threshold to pay that Fair Deal scheme and get supplemented in nursing homes.
There's an amazing statistic out of the UK on this issue, which is that 1 out of 5 UK pensioners live in poverty, right?
These are the fixed
UK. But 1 out of 4 live in households with assets over £1 million.
Yeah.
So that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, interestingly, again, we come back. So what you'll find is two things are going on, right? One is that parents and the elderly are living longer.
Yes.
Much, much longer.
Yeah.
The other is that the millennials, our Italian 90 kids, are not launching. Save a thought for the people who are older than us, who have kids in their late 20s and parents in their late 80s, and they're looking after both.
Yes. Yeah.
They're looking after both, right? This is a whole thing. But let's come back to the millennials, right? Let's come back to the millennials, right? If you look at the most significant vector inequality is housing. So, for example, in Ireland, same figures in the States if you can get them. The first quarter of last year, housing wealth increased by 93 billion euros.
Right.
The vast majority of that accrued to people above the age of 50, right? So every time house prices go up, the old get rich and the poor get poorer. And they get absolutely poor, not relatively poor, absolutely poor. I'll give you another statistic. For those citizens born in the late 1980s, early 1990s, who are 30 now, they are spending 30% of their disposable income on housing. People who were born in the 70s pay 12% at the age of 30 of their disposable income on housing. And people who were born in the 60s paid 10% of disposable income at 30 on housing. So what you can see is if you are 30 now, right? The amount of money that you are spending every week on just putting a roof over your head is 3 times more than people who are born 2 decades prior to you at the same age. So,
and I'd say there's a lot of people who spend an awful lot more than 30%.
So that's the average, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about the average house price in Ireland is 300 grand, not the average, the median. So right in the middle, right? And the salary of people in their late 20s, early 30s, right, which hasn't peaked yet, is about 35 grand, right? So there's no way in the world they can afford to live in. So every single time house prices rise, they get poorer, right? That's the first thing. So houses are driving a massive wedge between the generations. Now, in 2008, bizarrely, I wrote a book called The Generation Game. I think you probably remember it. And it was about this
Never
issue.
Read it.
I know, you wouldn't have read it. So you can shorthand now. I wrote a whole book. I could have said it in 5 minutes. Exactly.
I know, I did read it. I did.
It doesn't matter. Not many people read it. It was a niche product.
It's a great doorstop.
Yeah. But I mean, what it was all about was in 2008, it seemed to me that this was going to happen in the housing market, this cleavage,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, probably, you know, had I wrote that book in 2018, it probably would have done better because it was a bit ahead of its time. And sometimes in this business, you can't be too far ahead of your time because then you're totally
That's you all over though, Mac.
Exactly. It's too far ahead of its time. And you can't be behind your time because then you get and the chances of you getting right on the nose are very, very slim.
Yeah.
But that generation game was exactly, well, it was in the title. The title was things about the clash of generations.
Yeah.
This has got much worse than I even expected it as things have got older.
God. Right.
So if you think about, right, they're locked out of the housing market. And then you think about what happens when you're 30, 31, 32, is you want to have kids, right?
Yeah.
You want to settle down, you want to have kids, if that's your bag, right? Now, look at the cost of childcare. Childcare in Ireland is off the scales. In the US and the UK, Australia, Canada, it's all over the place. And the reason I pick those countries is continental Europe has fixed childcare. They have state-provided childcare.
Mm.
But us liberal democracies that speak English have gone down a different route. Now, I'll just give you the average childcare in Dublin is 12, think about this, right? It's 12,700 per child per year.
And that's net.
Well, that's the cost to you. Now, you've got to take your own tax away from that before you
pay
it.
That's what I mean,
yeah. So it's an extraordinary thing. So if you're on average salary of, let's say, 45 grand in your mid-30s, right, you're doing quite well. There's two of you. You earn 90 grand in Ireland. you probably pay about 19 grand in tax because the Irish tax system is very progressive,
yeah.
right? So let's say you've got about 70 left. Imagine you've two kids, right? If two kids, you're paying about 25% of your take-home wage on childcare.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Put
yeah.
the cost of housing on top of that, and you can see how disposable incomes are completely squeezed yeah. for this generation. So when we look at it, what you see is that lots and lots of our generation, but particularly the older generation, have this view of, oh my God, they're all woke, these kids, and they're only interested in, you know, transgender this. On the contrary, what they're actually, the reason they are upset with the world, the reason they are volatile, the reason they want to vote in different types of people, nothing to do with being woke. It's all to do with the fact that they've been shut out of the game. They've been actually shut yeah. out of the game. So the rhetorical question is, why should they be loyal to a system that is so disloyal to them? And this is something that I think, you know, if you look at politics over the next couple of years, right? And people try to explain, well, you know, how do you explain populism? How do you explain radicalism? How do you explain the fact that the centre isn't holding, to go back to our great friend Yeats?
Yes, indeed.
Okay? How do you explain that idea? You explain it by looking at the numbers. And what you see in this country, there's 372,000 people, right, in that bracket. That's 5 years born between the time Ray Houghton put the goal in the English net and the time Ray Houghton put the goal in the Italian net. So it's a lovely arc, okay? It's a beautiful arc. I told you, it all comes back to the Republic of Ireland soccer team, okay? Right? Those 371,000 odd people constitute 17% of the Irish electorate. So if they were all to vote, they would be 17%. 17% of the electorate in a PR system owns the election.
Mm.
That's the swing vote. That, if you get them, you win. Hands down, yeah. right? If you're a party of the centre, if you're a party in the UK, if you're in Ireland, if you're in the United States, if you're in any of these countries, right? Those kids are looking at, not those citizens are looking at similar citizens in Germany, Norway, Denmark. There is no childcare problem in the Scandinavian countries because it is paid for by the state. So it's a policy choice. There's nothing natural about having to pay 25% of your wage in childcare.
But the question is always, how do they afford it?
Well, they afford it in the same way as how did we afford free secondary education in the 1960s? We just did it. You just do it, right? So at the moment, if you are a millennial and you have a kid, 1 year old, two, three, to four, right? Say you go to school at five, right? By the time the child goes to school, your childcare bill collapses. Because the state provides schooling and, in effect, care,
yeah.
right? So you just bring it back for 4 years and you calculate how much it's going to cost us. And then you go back to our tech guys. Remember the windfall profit?
Yes.
All the tech, yeah, the 23
yeah, yeah.
billion?
Yeah.
Use that, ring fence that, and say we're going to provide universal childcare from 3 months, 5 months, yeah. whatever, you know, after maternity leave. Do what the Scandinavians do. It's a policy choice. Think about when it comes to housing. Austrians are not having this discussion about housing because they provide cooperative housing.
Mm.
So there is no house price inflation in Austria.
Right.
So
gotcha.
All this is policy.
Yeah.
This is not natural. No, yeah. There's no divine code that says you must pay when you're 32.
Yeah.
But I come back to the point. We leave it this political point, John. All these are policy choices. If you are a political party, if you are a political body, if you are a society, and you forget about that chunk of the electorate, you assume that because they're well-educated, because they're well-travelled, because they are better, more worldly, more cosmopolitan than their mums and dads, that they will gradually go towards the centre and they will be the stability. That's not going to happen unless politics looks after the concerns of this generation, this crucial pivotal generation. They will become radicalized. Why?
They already have.
Because there's nothing to be loyal to. Because every single turn, everything time you go, you yep. see Yeah. Your chances are blocked. So if the center wants to hold, it needs to embrace this generation. And thus far, it has left them on the lurch. How are you doing there? Just a quick shout out for our Patreon supporters who keep supporting us. And John, keep the lights on, I suspect.
Absolutely.
And in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to be putting together a new course at Trinity. And I will be sharing that course with you on Patreon over the next month or two. So watch out. Follow us, patreon.com/David McWilliams.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.